Three, two, one. A man must make his own choices, Caitlin said. They earn the silver. How they spend it is no concern of mine. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. Feel like we ought to break things up a little bit more. I don't know if listeners have noticed this or my co-hosts, but the intro quotes have been almost exclusively male up to this point. Not through, in my opinion, any form of latent misogyny on my part, but more the feeling that I wouldn't do particularly great justice to reading the female quotes. More a stylistic thing that I wish we had a female on the show to read those instead.
But it is that is definitely the biggest downside of Game of Thrones audiobooks, in my opinion. Listening to the reader try to do the female voices, especially during the sex scenes. It's not ideal. It's not great. That scene. I was in a McDonald's drive-thru when I was listening to that scene, and I was like, oh my god.
Well, your first mistake was being in a McDonald's drive-thru, Patrick.
Yeah. So, well, you know what?
Up to your youth.
So. Yeah, exactly. It was like 3 years ago. I was young and poor.
I'm it really still young made and you poor, question but, you know. Your beliefs, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. You know, my belief in audiobooks, to say the least.
Well, that's fair. I found them to be pretty questionable myself.
Yeah, the best audiobook, besides I think the English edition of the Harry Potter ones are pretty solid, but the best audiobook I ever listened to was His Dark Materials, which has a full cast recording where every major character has their own voice acting, and then Philip Pullman himself is reading all the narration. So it's like, that shit is good.
Not get through the second book in that series, to be perfectly honest. I tried couldn't do it.
They drop off a lot after the first book.
To be fair, I was 10, so it might have been over my head at the time.
It gets a little philosophical for a kid's book.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. It's some pretty deep stuff.
I think it's a lot like, say, like the Mistborn trilogy. The first book sets up this super cool world and has nice pacing and is very, very interesting. And then, like Roy said, the later ones get a little too philosophical. I guess you could probably even lump, say, The Matrix into this. And, you know, they kind of lose their footing.
Well, I mean, the third Matrix movie was just an hour and a half fight scene, so...
Was it? I don't even remember what happened in the third Matrix movie anymore.
Wasn't there the Neo the fighting the Mr. Party? Smith was like... That? An hour and a half of that movie.
Huh. Maybe I should watch those movies. I
was talking to my roommate about the Matrix movies, and he said that he was watching the third one. At the beginning of that fight scene, he left, got lunch, came back, and they were still in the middle of the fight scene. Hadn't even gotten out of that one scene yet.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
You know what's even more impressive?
Well, what
we're
is?
Kind of, we've like done the reverse to our listeners.
We sure have, yeah.
We've skipped all of the content, gone straight to props and slops.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Episode's only about 10 minutes long this week.
Yeah, it's just for Austin's lap, so you guys can all turn it off right now because we know you do anyway
people,
when you get
to... tuning in for a book podcast because I was about to go on a long rant about how terrible the second and third Mistborn books are, so...
Yeah. Well, I think everyone will agree with you on that.
You know, I have to say...
What's
his face? I think it might be good for us to go in this reverse because people never listen to our props and slaps, but now they have to.
Yeah. Ooh, so there we go.
Hear the rest
now
of our
on,
content. Yeah.
We'll start doing all of our episodes of props and slaps up front.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about regionals. They got announced. Something happened at. I didn't read it because I'm not. I don't care until they announce where they are and what's the prizes. But what happened? What was this announcement?
Because Patrick, you're a free rider. You don't organize tournaments. So.
Yep, sure am.
Yeah.
A free rider.
Sure
I like this terminology.
A hedge knight of sorts.
Yes.
Indeed.
So yes, the regional application is up there. So. You should go to the FFG OP website and take a look. It doesn't look... there's a couple of details, I think, that sort of stand out, and I think Will has some feelings about the limited tournament stuff. But I think the most interesting thing is that they set a firm cap of 24 regionals, which I think is probably... that was the immediate thing that sort of stood up to me. So we know that there's going to be 24 regionals in the United States max, which is kind of interesting.
Wasn't there a firm cap at least last year, and I could have sworn other years, maybe not every, but in the past, didn't they have like that map where they divided out what the regions were, and they were like two per region. That's it.
It was it was three. Yeah.
I thought it was more than 24 total.
But I
last year.
But what I thought was so interesting about it was that it's just 24. It could be 10 in California, 3 in the Midwest, 5 in the South. You know what I mean? Like, there was just 24. It was,
I would imagine that internally they are working on that region breakdown. They just haven't put it out to the public yet. I can't imagine that they would cluster 10 of those 24 in a single region.
I don't know. I've seen in prior years huge clusters in kind of the middle late years of the first edition, where there were roughly 8 regionals in the New York northeastern area, and then nothing in Iowa, stuff like that. There's
been
Iowa
didn't get a regional
weird
last
years.
Year,
did not.
They did. I thought.
No, I don't think so.
It was the year before that I went up.
And Illinois also did not get one, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember.
I couldn't go to very many regionals.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of a bummer to not have a map in this announcement, so that stores that are coming here to check out the process are able to see which region they're in and kind of get an idea. Because I get the opinion from store owners I talk to and familiar with that, they know the other notable stores kind of in their region, so to speak. So I think a lot of them would know who their main folks were that they were up against if they could see a map.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's fair. I feel like the reason that they haven't is probably just because they haven't gotten it all sorted out yet. I'd imagine they just don't have that. They may be trying to drum up a new regions map with the new game, and they probably just don't have everything together yet. It's still pretty early, so.
If I was a betting man, I would bet that FFG actually isn't probably taking location very seriously, that they're probably looking more at facilities. Like, can you host a regional that will... because most of the regionals this year were pretty well attended. Like, can your store actually comfortably support a 40-plus person regional over, say, we got to make sure that we have three Midwest, three New York, or three Northeast, three South, whatever. I think they're going to, you know, that would be what my guess would be by just sort of saying
we're going to have three of them in New York. That makes sense.
Well, yeah.
I mean, well, that's happened. It's the only place that has happened.
Okay. Well, no. Okay. Well, I said New York, not New York City. So one in New York City. You have one in the lower counties, and then one in upstate New York. That covers a massive amount of geographic distance, actually.
Yeah. I mean, Rochester. No, I'm 100% in. Yeah.
But you know, thinking about facilities there, Roy. You know, probably another consideration is which ones can host a 2-day event, not just, you know, space to have those physical people, but that are up for it scheduling wise and that are open, you know, Saturday and Sunday at the appropriate kind of hours to potentially split an event into 2 days, like FFG seems to be recommending is done this year.
That's definitely true.
Yeah. So, I mean, and speaking of that, and they seem to be offering some kind of interesting sideline for some, but not all, stores that do split their event into 2 days.
I thought it was every store that did split their event into 2 days. I thought that the only people who were supposed to split it were the people that were approved as these, like, limited regionals.
I don't know. Do you have to be approved to have it on 2 days? I must have misread that.
Or that I may have misread it as well. That was my interpretation of it.
I thought it was saying that there was a limited number of the total regionals that would get this extra thing based on. I mean, I would assume whether they said they could do it on 2 days or not, but I got the impression that there may be other factors. Let's see. Due to the limited number of events we want to support with these kits, this is a likely possibility for many communities. However, additional limited kits and limited prize kits will be used at some other events around the world through a new program starting in the months following the regional championship season. Sorry, this is in response to their headline, bolded, large text title, what if my community does not have access to the limited kits? So to me, that makes it sound like, well, no, not everybody's going to get these at a regional. You may get access later, but not at the regional.
Oh, yeah, there's just the extra paragraph. You may still elect to organize over 2 days. Okay. I must have missed this.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would, to be completely honest, if you didn't have the extra kit, but
I don't know. I like how they even say, you could even hold a side event on Sunday using the same structure as the bonus tournament and distribute other prizes.
You mean prizes that you put the hard work
into. In case you didn't get it. Right. it's amusing. You know, and this section here actually brings me to my two issues with the announcement, because it cracks me up, so to speak, in a cynical kind of black-hearted way, that this same paragraph about the limitedness of the limited kits then also says, stay tuned for upcoming organized play announcements about this opportunity and sign up for our retailer newsletter and community newsletters to never miss another update. I don't know. Did you guys sign up for the newsletters after Zach was on the show talking about them?
I did.
Did you get anything emailed to you announcing this stuff?
I did get something emailed to me announcing this, but not from FFG. But from my local store.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I double-checked my inbox, my junk mail. I saw nothing. Our organizer at the local store here was griping in our local Facebook group that they didn't get any sort of email notification through this stuff. So it just kind of bums me out that, like, here are these great tools. Sign up for them. But we're not going to use them. So I hope you check our website every day. Because this is a time-sensitive thing. You've only got, you know, a couple weeks to sign up. And I can't imagine being a store owner or employee that you sit around refreshing a dozen different company websites in case they make a time-sensitive announcement.
Well, that's what you have interns for, Will. Come on, think outside the box.
You're right, you're right. The other thing that bugs me, also from a store, but potentially player aspect, is remember how I said that that paragraph was in response to this bolded, larger typeface question that they had typed out? I love that both the regional announcement and the store championship announcement that went up the same day both say, in the same kind of heading, what games are supported on the blank track? In our case, on the November track. The paragraph then does not say. The response to the question they asked does not say.
This track contains two of our most competitive and engaging games, which I think...
Yeah!
For this year, it's only the two games. It's only the two, though, actually, this year, right? Because no L5R, Conquest is dead, so is Cthulhu.
Right.
Arkham isn't played competitively. L5R isn't played competitively. Star Wars has moved over to the May track. So what's left?
Right.
So it's Netrunner and us.
Just...
Right?
Yeah. And how hard would it have been in that sentence to add after the word games, comma, a Game of Thrones and Android Netrunner? Now, I choose to put them in that order for alphabetical reasons, not necessarily popularity, but you could flip-flop them if you wanted.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have required effort, but it sounds to me like they might be planning to add more games than a November track, and they just want boilerplate language that they can just copy and paste.
I mean, you can still... I mean, because they say, please visit our organized play games page, blah, blah, blah. There's a link. You can go there and get the list. So when they add games, they'll have to update it there anyway. So, I don't know. It just... To me, it bugs me because I'm like to think I know how a lot of the internet-savvy world works these days, and people don't click extra links to go look for more information.
It's true.
They just scroll by this. So how many, even if a store owner like happens to have looked at the FFG webpage to see this announcement, will they then go yet another like step down that rabbit hole to find which games these actually apply to? Maybe. Will players that are interested in it go to that extra step? Maybe. But it just seems like writing 101 to have just included it on this page. And then at the end said, for more information, go to our organized play page and put the link. So, I don't know. I probably care about this stuff more than I should, but it just seems so simple that it bugs me that it's a stumbling block.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you, Will. But I want to come back before we sort of move on to this idea of two-day regionals, which I'm a little skeptical of, to be completely honest.
I can see that.
Because I think it's, on one hand, I think it is a good idea. I think if FFG puts a lot of effort into promoting and curating the locations of these limited kit two-day events, it could be really successful. But on the other hand, I don't have very much faith, and no offense to Zach, I know he's taking over and he's trying to improve, and this is definitely a better announcement than last year's announcement. It's a bit more transparent. There's definitely been clear improvement, but I don't know if FFG's OP is ready yet to really carefully curate to make this a success. Because I think if they're going to try and do this, it has to succeed the first time. And because if they screw up, they drop the ball, people are just going to be like, well, I spent money on a hotel room to go to the X regional. You know, why don't we say like the, Chicago regional, and it was really just poorly done. It was in a bad location. The hotel was really expensive. You know, the side event was terrible. The OP support, it wasn't worth my time and my money to spend, say, $200, $300 on a hotel room and spend a whole weekend to this. I think if they screw it up, it's going to just damage the overall OP experience going forward. Just like in many ways, Nationals this year did significant damage to sort of the OP. The fact it was so poorly run. No offense to our U.S. champion, but it was just not the best run event. It was sort of tacked on. It was barely promoted. You know, that did damage to U.S. Nationals. Like, it's not considered the same prestigious event that Gen Con or Stalic or even Canadian Nationals are. Like, it was just not handled well.
And it could have been.
It could have been, I agree. And it's just like, I'm a little bit scared that FFG is biting off more than they could chew with this. But hopefully they won't. This is maybe a preventive, like, trying to, if FFG is listening to this, you do need to be careful with where you pick and put these limited kits and where these two-day regionals. Because I definitely know that it's difficult to give up an entire weekend, not just a Saturday or not just a Sunday, but both of an entire weekend for a Game of Thrones tournament that's just a Game of Thrones tournament, not something like Gen Con or Origins or something like that. So,
yeah, and even just if Saturday and Sunday are all that players have to give up to make it possible, like our regional last year, there were folks that drove down from, I'm trying to remember, somewhere in Nebraska, Lincoln maybe. Now I didn't get the like details on exactly how their travel plans were, but I would assume to make that fly, you'd have to drive down Friday after work, get in quite late, sleep as much as you can, roll out of bed for the tournament, and then they booked it out of there afterward. But now if you're stretching that out to Sunday, who knows how long things go on Sunday, then do folks want to get home, you know, extra late, kill themselves going to work the next day, or take like Monday off for travel back home? Who knows? But I think in general, it's going to make folks less likely to travel, let alone things like the hotel costs that you mentioned, Roy.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think, I hope it's successful, and if there does end up being one that's within a decent travel distance for myself, I will definitely consider doing that, and because I just want to support this, but I definitely do worry that this might be biting off a little bit more than they could chew. But I think we probably talked this to death at this point.
We definitely talked it more than we originally meant to. Patrick, you got anything to add, or you just want us to move on and be quiet?
I do not. I do want that second thing.
There you go, then. Okay, yep. Well, let's move on to things quite a bit more fun. Battle for the Trident was this last weekend, and I like that FOG threw this kind of special event at us. Get folks a little more engaged. Now, I've kind of heard in general that turnout for these events was more depressed than folks were wanting, but I still thought it was fun. Get out there, play some games, vote on which traded agenda you want to support. So I know I hit one. Did both of you guys manage to make it to one?
Yep.
I did, yeah.
Yep, I ran one in New York.
Nice. Well, I think that was a bit of a special one, so we may come around to that one last, Roy.
Sure. Go ahead, Patrick. Why don't you tell us your Trident experience then?
I had a lot of fun at my Trident tournament. I played a pretty experimental deck, and it was a pretty failed experiment. It was pretty bad. I only won one game.
Okay, you gotta give me a little bit more about
it. It was a Tyrell, very aggressively Varusing deck. It's kind of like a pre-Valor Valor deck, you might say. So it had like a lot of dupes on everybody, and two summons, and grind off multiple Varuses and win through that. And the first deck I played was a Stark, like 46 character Stark decks. And so he just had like three copies of all his people too. So he just duped them all, and then my Varuses were meaningless. And then my second game, I lost to a Tyrell Winter deck that was playing multiple two claim plots, and there is my claim to get really big claim challenges.
They were playing There Is My
Claim. Yeah, wow. I know. And it worked pretty well against me. But I think that was mostly because I saw zero economy and they were playing a winter deck. So I pretty much just couldn't play anything. And then I won my last game. So I think that ultimately, my conclusion was that my deck just really needs an on-demand reset rather than having to find a Varus. Soon, I know. But I still had a lot of fun. That winter deck ended up winning our tournament, and it was a very cool deck. And it played a card that people really overlooked, I think for good reason, because I still don't think it's a very good card. But it worked in that deck. That was cool.
Yeah, I think overlooked is being generous. Straight up panned is probably more accurate.
We had some mean things
so
to say about
that card. Who'd you vote for?
I voted for Knight more than myself.
Good man.
No. Nope, yeah. Knights is the right choice.
I voted for the Knights as well. Played the same deck as I played up at Iron Worlds because I left the bulk of my collection there and just had to play with one of the handful of decks I had in my backpack. So
is Kyle mailing you your cards?
He's supposed to be. I haven't seen them yet. Hoping that's coming before too long. I'm going to get antsy wanting to build stuff with my Lannister box. I don't even have that because I literally bought it before leaving to drive to Iowa and kind of flipped through cards as I drove. Then sorted them all and put them in the box while I was at Kyle's. So they're all there at Kyle's as well.
It's what you get for going without Kristen.
Exactly. She's there to remember these things. So, yeah, I threw another vote toward Knights. 10 more votes, that is, since I won the event. In fact, I think Knights had a pretty good weekend. I know several of the tournaments in the Midwest and at least one on the West Coast all had Knights winners. So we'll see. The Twitter votes are bumming me out a little bit. The Knights are in last place at the moment with 40. Army's in second place with 46. And the Maesters with 72 retweets.
That's ridiculous. Man.
I don't understand why people want Maesters.
I don't get it either. It's just absurd.
Maesters are toolboxy characters.
Maesters are all three cost characters. Maesters, you play a Maester deck, that deck loses the game to first the winner. Every time they flip that plot and all of your dudes are gone.
Right, and I can see an argument for Knights. Like, Knights, I think, is the acceptable second choice. But, like, Armies? Like, why should we, like, having just played Draft, like...
Oh, yeah, no.
Just being able to stick fucking ranging parties in any deck.
Get that out of here.
It's just like, no. Or Knights of the Sun in any deck that can get its hands on it. Like, it's just no.
You know,
even Knights is kind of broken.
You can be like this more, Will.
Like, even Knights is kind of broken. Like, Jamie in any deck that you want. Sir Aerys in any deck.
Right.
Like,
it would actually be good. It would be a playable tier one agenda.
Exactly.
Maesters, I don't think that Maesters would be a tier one agenda unless they print bigger Maesters. Like, unless they pick. Like, this game is all about, like,
like, strength matters so much more in this game. And the Macers, while they are toolboxy, they don't have enough control effects to be able to beat a deck that just has bigger, better guys. So, like, then all your agenda is doing is it's supplementing your low curve with some more interesting low curve stuff. And I don't think that's worth an agenda for me.
I don't necessarily disagree with you right now, but the thing is, whichever trait gets chosen as the trait is going to shape design priorities forward, because the game has to be designed in a way that supplements this agenda, right? So any future Maester that they print is got to interact with the Maester agenda in some way, in many ways similar to the Maester's path in first edition. Well, the same would be true, or the Knight's agenda in first edition, right? So the question is, many people who have, myself included, nostalgic memories of the Maester's path in first edition want to see the game pushed in a way that encourages Nate and Danny to explore Maester design space, which there really isn't right now. While, you know, and I think Knights, while it is a good second option to choose, like, Knights is already a design space that Danny and Nate are interested in exploring, and Armies is just a sinking hole in the ground because the armies are way too efficient to just be given to any faction that's running the agenda. So I think what we need to do is go with Maesters, because Maesters is the more interesting and design-opening choice.
Man, I just don't know who has these fond memories of the Maesters' path from first edition. My memories are that it led to a lot of broken crap.
Well, I mean, I don't think that the agenda is going to be anything like the Maester's Path. So
definitely.
That's not my concern. My concern is not from a first edition perspective of, like, Maesters were horrible in first edition and they'll be horrible again if they come back. I really don't think that. But I do think that, like, if, like obviously this agenda is not coming out for, I would say, at least a year. Because they playtest things so far in advance that they're probably already done with cycle 3, and so this would have to be 4 or later, probably, or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Or the next box or something.
Or the next box or something, sure, if they want to make it evergreen. But either way, I would say that when this agenda comes out, either that box or cycle or whatever, if it was Maesters, would need to be full of more Maesters, or it would take multiple cycles after the agenda even comes out for the agenda to actually be playable in a tier 1 sense. Whereas Knights, you could print a Knights agenda right now that says you can play Knights from any faction with some sort of drawback, and that could be a tier 1 agenda right now. And that's, as a very hardcore Jamie player, the agenda, I'm voting for the agenda that I think will be the best and the most playable. And I really just don't, I don't see a Maester agenda being playable without being, like, in order to make it playable, you'd have to give it something that made the Maesters really good. And then it would be too restrictive on future Maesters, kind of like you said, with design space. So that's why I voted for Knights. But I think we all agree, armies are just absurd, and definitely shouldn't vote for armies. Because,
well, let's see who is stronger comes back. Then I'm all for armies.
I think that an army deck, pretty much no matter what, is just going to be a big guys smash aggro deck, and I want the game to go away from big guys smash, not towards big guys smash. So I'm gonna definitely pass on the armies.
Well, there is one other important thing I think that's kind of a draw in favor of Knights, and that's that, you know, part of the stated goal of second edition was really putting the focus on the named, unique, important characters in the story. And, like, let's be honest, how many people are just really excited about Maesters from a story perspective? I mean, sure, I suppose Pycelle is kind of cool till his beard gets cut off. Crescent's pretty cool till he dies. And Amon's pretty cool till he dies. And that's probably about it. Sam, I don't know of any Pylos fans. Not a maester yet, doesn't
count. You're gonna have to wait until at least like cycle 6 or 7, assuming that Martin is actually ever able to finish those books for Sam to be a maester.
Yeah, but knights, on the other hand, I mean, you've got Jamie, you've got the Knight of Flowers, you've got the Mountain, you've got all the other folks in the Kingsguard, Aerys Okart, even extremely bit knight characters like the Knight, the Sol Greyjoy Knight, like get more like fan enjoyment and buzz than any named maester that I can think of.
I think it would also be totally fine if with knights they did something like you can play any knights, you can play knights from any faction that cost less than 6 or something like that. So you can't just play Jamie and the Mountain.
So you
every
have
deck.
To play the 5-cost Jamie.
Right, exactly. So if you can play, it encourages playing a 5-cost Jamie, who I think that, if ever there's a deck for 5-cost Jamie, it's a deck where every, like, all of your characters are knights.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that would make a lot more sense, and then you can, you know, choose your main faction if you want to be main Lannister for Jaime and the Mountain, or if you want to be main Stark for the Blackfish, or main Baratheon for Barristan. I think it would be far more interesting than the Maester deck, which could say you cannot play any Maesters that cost more than 3, and it wouldn't be any different from saying you can play any Maester, because they all cost less than 3, or 3 or less, rather. So That's my opinion on it. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of shit because everybody's on Team Maester. My tournament was one. My tournament final was 2 Maester voters against each other. I was disgusted.
That's
yeah,
sad.
I know. So we'll see how it shakes out. You know, when that Maester agenda comes out, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure they'll design around it enough that it'll be good, but it just doesn't do it for me, personally.
It's okay to be wrong, Patrick.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you accept that it's okay that you're wrong. I'm glad that you've had that realization, right?
Humility.
It is okay. It is okay to be wrong. You're right. Let's talk about draft, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good idea. Roy's Battle for the Trident tournament was something a little special.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was draft.
Oh, why? Oh, and that was a perfect segue then. Look at me. I totally knew that.
That was why we saved it.
Yep. My segues are the best. Gonna be honest.
They are, Patrick.
Well done.
Yeah.
They are.
So tell us about this draft battle, Roy.
Yeah, so we draft is kind of was a popular format in New York for first edition, and we want to sort of bring it to the fore for second edition as well, and so I organized this battle, Battle of the Trident didn't, because it was kind of an awkward weekend, and I think it became even more awkward. Sort of people seemed very exhausted, sort of at the end of last week, so you know. The interest was a little low, so I thought, well, why don't we just make this a draft event, sort of kick off what draft is going to be. So we had about 10 people, which we ran as a single pod, and I was a little bit worried about that. But it actually ended up working out really well. The draft pool supported – people were able to make interesting, fun decks from a full 10-person pod. Our eventual winner was the German national champion who was stopping by on his way – back from Worlds. He was in a final versus a local player here, and we also had the world champion Joe was in our top four that we did, and it was a really big success. People really liked it. Overall, I think of the nine of the 10 players came away with a very positive experience with draft, and the player who didn't enjoy draft had never drafted before, didn't pay attention. We were explaining to him how it worked, and was just sort of looked befuddled and bemused the entire time while both I and his friends were trying to explain what was going on in the middle of it. So it was a little bit of a sort of user error situation there. So I overall, people were really happy. We're going to be running, knock on wood, a post-cut draft at Red Saturday, and it's just something that looks like it's going to end up being pretty happily into the regular rotation up in New York. So it's I really have nothing but nice things to say about the second edition draft pool as it is right now. Obviously, if there were more cards in second edition, I think the draft pool would be a little bit stronger. But for where we are, the fact that it's made up of just two boxes and two cycles worth of cards, along with a few supplementary cards that Danny and Nate designed, I think it's about as strong as you possibly could be.
Yeah, I mean, draft is a phenomenal format from what I've played in the past. I admit to not having had the chance to play in the official second edition Valerian draft pool, but looking at what we know of the pool and the draft only format cards and everything, it looks pretty sweet. Though it does make me wish some of those draft only cards were actual cards, you know.
Pale mare.
Yeah, in support of Saltcliff, I could really get behind that.
Yeah.
Well, we already have like support Soul Cliff because it's called Asha.
Well, yeah, but can you imagine if Balin was called Asha?
I can. That world seems
a little. That would be a little too good on me. I think sounds
amazing. Is what it.
Well, you know,
it would certainly would give Greyjoy the necessary boost it might need right now in the constructed card pool, but.
Yeah, but then it just makes Greyjoy even more draw Balon or lose the game.
I mean, it's pretty good on Euron, too, so.
But Euron doesn't get unopposed challenges very much.
Oh, yeah. Trikon with Renown in that ability? Yeah, but. Ooh. But maybe we're going
to. When are they
going
to let Euron get an unopposed challenge if he's got Saltcliff on him?
Scouting vessel.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. We'll see. We'll see what Greyjoy does post-Valor. That's a discussion for another episode. So it sounds like Support of Saltcliff is one of your favorite cards in the draft set, Will. Maybe we should all talk about our top five favorite cards from the draft pool.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that. Like we can do that, and then maybe give some general draft tips for folks. That are kind of getting started in the format.
Absolutely. I played draft at Worlds. Well, in case anybody's wondering if I've played draft. It was fun.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you wanna lay your top five on us and brief bit of reasoning?
Why not? Yeah, I'll go ahead and lay those on you guys.
Perfect.
All right. In no particular order, Black Crown Knights. They're a draft-only card. And they were a first edition card. They are in this draft format. They are 6 cost, 5 strength, military power, army, and knight. They have no attachments, and they have reaction. After you win a power challenge in which Black Crown Knights is participating, discard 1 card from your hand to have Black Crown Knights gain 2 power. Draft format only. Just a really good card in draft. Like, they get you power. They're an army slash a knight, which means you can play them with the army knight agenda, which means you can give them renown and then also discard a card to be getting 3 power off of this one character in a power challenge, which is pretty incredible. I think they're one of the strongest cards in the draft format. All right, next up, is, you know, why don't we go like one at a time? Why don't we all go okay. through one at yeah. a time? That seems better.
That's fine.
Otherwise, I'm just going to be monologuing for like, you know, 5 minutes here. That sounds like no okay. fun. Nobody okay. wants to hear me talk that long.
Oh, I do, Patrick.
Well, I considered jumping in to say I thought about the Black Crown Knights.
Sorry. That power You're right, Roy.
They're a good card.
Nobody who's not on this podcast wants to listen to me for that long.
But no, they're a very good card, and I think you're right. I think the synergy with the agenda, which I think is in many ways a really it's agenda that it makes second edition drafting easier than first edition drafting, but is probably the closest thing to that's broken about second edition drafting, because that agenda, oh man, whew, you can draft some seriously obnoxious decks with that agenda, and Black Crown Knights is one of the tools to power it.
It's true. It's true. It's a very strong agenda, but I think the other agendas are strong as well. So I think it balances out, personally.
Yeah, it's just maybe the most straightforward. Yeah.
And it really depends on your pool, too. I mean, if your pool has a lot of knights and armies, then it's going to be a pretty strong agenda. But if it's got, you know, some knights and armies and two people are trying to make a deck with it, you can get pretty thin and kind of come out short, especially if you don't find any of those power-grabbing knights like the Black Crown Knights or like the Great Jones Vanguard. So, Will, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. Well, my first one is not going to be any surprise to folks that were listening to the podcast about 5 minutes ago. My first one is Support of Saltcliff. I like the card that much in Constructed, but in Draft, that stealth number one is going to be so huge in getting basically any challenge you want through, plus a stand and being able to get even more action advantage out of, you know, whatever key Greyjoy character you manage to draft. Oh man, that's a good way to do a lot of work and make your character base count for more than it normally would in a limited card pool.
Yeah, it's a really, really strong card. One I don't want to see come to Constructed, but it is a really, really fantastic card that can really power your deck if you run Greyjoy, particularly if you run out of as like a second faction to supplement some of the factions that have a bit stronger cards in the card pool overall.
Yeah, I agree.
So you want to go to mine?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sounds
like.
So mine is a card that's coming out in Constructed in the next chapter pack, the one with Valor, I believe, which is the new Stannis. He's a 7-cost loyal character, military power, and he's a king and a lord. And during power challenges, each participating non-king character gets -1 strength. Reaction after you win dominance, choose a non-loyal character. That character cannot stand during the standing phase this round. This Stannis is super obnoxious in draft. He's very powerful, 6 strength on 2 very important challenge icons in draft. And then the -1 for all characters can just give you a headache. I played a very, very, very obnoxious grindy game with Keith from the Brotherhood in our draft game that both Keith and I walked away just really not enjoying. And it was entirely because he had Stannis on the board. And I was also playing a Targ deck that had the Unsullied. And we were and multiple minuses, just running around trying to figure out how to play around this card on both end of our of the table. It was he's a very powerful card. He can lock down the power challenge for you if you play him. He definitely is one of the reasons why I think the bearer card pool is very strong in the draft set. And he's just a really, really powerful character, particularly for one that doesn't have Native Renown.
Yeah, absolutely. He is a very powerful character in draft. And I'm curious to see how much he's going to do in Constructed. Because he kind of fits into a different niche than the core set Stannis does. So I'm going to be interested to see what kind of decks are going to play him.
I do like him, though. I think he's about my favorite of the kings that we've
seen. Well, yeah, I mean, that's Renly, so you're incorrect, but, you know, he's second. So
Renly's brought down by that terrible art, though. This Stannis, at least, is pretty
cool. No. It's not terrible.
This Stannis art is pretty sick.
That Renly art's fine. It's that terrible. Renly art is just fine. It's just fine. And you know what? The card is good enough that it makes up for the art. All right, because that card is amazing. Love it. Love everything about it.
He's a good card. Terrible art, but good card.
He is. Not terrible. Fine art.
Okay, well, what else do you think is amazing then, Patrick?
What else do I think is amazing? That's a great question. I am going to go with, for my next card, a card that I'm gonna stick with our trend. Another card that's coming out in Pack 4. That's just one of my favorite cards overall, so I gotta throw it in there, even though it's, you know, it's solid in draft, it's gonna be great in constructed, and that's the Haunted Forest. It's a Night's Watch location. And I think that most people know what it does by this point. I don't know if I need to read it, but it's just awesome. It's really good in draft. Giving plus one strength to your side while you're defending can be really strong. It can also be strong if you're lacking in an icon, which happens a lot in draft. Just not having to give your opponent unopposed power for that challenge can be really helpful. If you manage to find a wall and a haunted forest, guys, good luck to your opponent because they are in trouble. And I'm also just super hyped for this card in Joust. I think it's gonna make the Night's Watch even better than they already are, and I think they're climbing their way up to tier 1 status as it is, so very excited for what this card's gonna do for the game.
I'm gonna disagree. I think in Constructed I agree with Patrick that this card is gonna be really strong and just sort of raises the obnoxiousness of the Night's Watch defense deck up another tick and towards that sort of nightmarish NPE experience that people, including, I think, going back to the original review of the Night Watch cards that Aaron and Will and Tommy did on this podcast, like that there's always this danger of wall decks getting out of control. I think Haunted Forest is a problem construct. I think a draft, it does have some of the strengths Patrick mentioned, particularly filling that hole, but I think it's just not as overall powerful because you have to find the wall, right, for it to really get out of control. It's a useful card, but it's still a 2 gold location that doesn't immediately get you power, even if it might deny some power to your opponent. That's going to sometimes be difficult to drop in draft. In draft, I think
characters
become an even bigger premium than
I agree.
Even in constructed. So it's,
I will say, you know,
it's not one of my favorite cards, but
it's one of my favorite cards, but I don't think it's one of the best cards necessarily. I think it's more one of my favorite cards just because I'm so hyped about it for Constructed. That I just kind of wanted to mention it. I agree. I don't think it's nearly as strong in draft as it is in Constructed. More than anything in draft, it's just irritating to play against. Because I found that in... I only played against it one time, but in that one game, it single-handedly like stopped me from winning a few challenges that I otherwise would have been able to sneak through, just because that one extra strength matters even more when you have fewer characters, fewer big characters especially, and like chump challenges are just a lot easier for your opponent to block with this out, so... But I agree, it's not the best card in draft. The rest of my cards will be better draft cards.
Okay, sorry, Patrick, we'll forgive you this time.
No, I accept your criticism.
Constructed card as a choice.
It's one of my favorite cards of all time, just because it brings Night's Watch so much closer to that NPE nightmare that I'm so excited to play. You have no idea. So excited to just watch my opponent's dreams crumble before them as I play my third Haunted Forest and they pull the gun out of their bag to kill themselves. It's just, you know.
Wow. So who, on that happy note, who are we transitioning to do the next card?
I think it's over to Will.
All right. So my next one is going to be another draft-only card. That's going to be the Raven Tree Elite, which I will point out what it does this time. 6 gold, 5 strength, military and power. Army, House Tully, no attachment, stealth. Each House Tully character control gains immune to opponent's events while it's participating in a challenge, blah, blah, blah. That's basically it. But I personally think that this is one of the best bodies available in the pool. I don't think you're as likely to get hit with a mid-challenge event in draft as you might be in constructed. And even in constructed, it's not common at the moment, aside from probably Dracarys. So this is mainly just on the back of the strength icons and stealth. And it just really makes sure that you can punch through the challenges you want. And does it with enough just native base strength to pull off any of the win by five responses that you need to or want to pull off, whether that's a superior claim or a put to the torch or what have you. So I don't know if you guys noticed, but it turns out I really like stealth.
Yeah, I was just about to say, what I've learned so far is that Will really likes stealth in draft. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on this one. Just because, you know, Roy disagreed with me, and I don't want to feel like the only one who's terrible at picking cards. So okay. I had a Knights and Armies deck in my second pool at Worlds, and I had a Raven Tree Hill Elite, and I chose not to play it. Because first of all, that line of text about events is just completely irrelevant. Even if you have Tully characters, there just are not enough events that you're actually going to protect them from that is going to be relevant. In fact, a quick scroll through the list, I am not seeing a single event that I would actually care about them getting hit by. I don't see any events. I guess maybe Viper's Rage, if you're going to stand them and do them in another challenge, would be the only one that I could imagine. But more importantly, I'm not as much on the stealth hype train as you are, Will. I mean, stealth's great, but I think that I don't know if it's quite as good as you're envisioning. I think that a 6-cost card needs to be really doing something for you in draft, because, I mean, first of all, you know, gold's a little bit tighter. Playing a bomb is harder, and also, you know, the Pale Mare is in, I would say, 4 out of 5 decks in draft, at least. And if you're hanging on to this guy, I don't know. I mean, I see what you're saying about pushing through events, but those events are pretty rare, and there's a pretty good chance that you won't have any of them. I don't know. I personally chose to put in copies of the Black Crown Knights and Great Jones Vanguard over this guy, because I thought that the power gain was ultimately going to be superior than the stealth overall. How do you feel, Roy? Which do you feel is stronger between Renown and Stealth in draft?
I'd say Renown is probably overall... I think you're correct in the decision of, if I had to pick between, let's say I had a pack and I had this army and the Black Crown Knights, I'd probably pick the Knights over this army. But I think if you end up with this army in your pool when you're constructing your deck, and it's not a bad option. I think it's flexibility, the fact that it has the traits that it can go into a Knights and Armies deck and give you that stealth, because I think you are underrating stealth a little bit, particularly stealth on a power icon, because I think particularly if you end up in a situation, you know, actually after a Pale Mare, stealth, particularly if you're playing that Knights on the army on Armies deck, if you save this plus something that's a little bit lower cost that might have Renown, or you hold back a little bit and you play that Renown after they Pale Mare you, and you can use this stealth alongside the Renown to sort of close a game out, I think actually the stealth is pretty valuable. So I think, while I think some of the arguments that you're making are pretty convincing, you're still underrating the card card, because the stealth on a high strength character that is conditionally immune to events is a pretty strong, efficient card. It's probably not an S tier card, but I definitely like, say, the Black Crown Knights are, or maybe one of the cards that I'm going to get to in a second. But it's definitely very...
It's almost certainly not S.
It's still very strong. It's like an A-minus card or a B-plus card.
Fair enough. So fair enough.
I think it's still it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
And one just other kind of thing that I want to throw in there is in the draft format, like what you are literally doing, as in passing the cards, I think that most folks are likely to pick other things with flashier text boxes, giving you an opportunity to snatch up Raven Tree Elite. I think they're very likely to make it to you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Convincing arguments, fellas. So over to Roy for his...
Is not the S tier card, but it is an efficient card, and that is a card that's in the landing box, Ocean Road. So I'm not going to read it. I think particularly because of the prominence of the importance of the Knights and Armies agenda that we keep coming back to, but also, I forget what the official title of it is, but like Prosperity of the Realm, the one that lets you choose two factions and the first in-faction card that you pick of your main faction is reduced by one. I think Ocean Road creates a lot of flexibility, and it's good even if you end up having to play the seven faction agenda because your pool is a little awkward. Just Ocean Road, it's zero cost, so it helps on setup. It's additional economy that's, again, as Patrick noted earlier, economy is very tight in draft, but the fact that it can work, that you're playing these sort of, to talk, to use a magic term, these multicolor decks, it can smooth out that curve in a really useful way. There's some powerful neutral cards in the set. So it's just a very useful card that I think towards the middle to end of your draft, when you sort of your pool's basic contours are available to you, this is actually a kind of card that you start drafting because you need to be able to supplement, say, some of the bombs and other things that you're able to draft earlier with the ability to play those cards. And Ocean Road is the kind of card that lets you play some of the bombs. It's definitely never something you would pick early in a draft, but as a draft moves along, you would definitely look at, oh, hey, this is going to be the kind of card that's going to let me clutch out that powerful character after someone palemares me. So I really
think
Ocean Road's very powerful.
Yeah, I think definitely if you're playing, I think basically if you're playing any agenda other than the one that is only two factions, that one I might be a little hesitant to play it in. But even then, I mean, it kind of depends on your balance of how many in-house cards you have to how many out of faction cards you have. But definitely if you're playing like the Knights and Armies deck and you have a lot of out of faction cards, that Ocean Road can be really helpful for you. So I think it's a good pick. And I guess that means it's back to me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. So my next one. This one is also a card that's coming out soon, I believe. I don't remember what pack it is in, but it exists. And that is the Silent Sisters. It's a neutral character, 3 cost, 1 strength, intrigue and power icons, ally the 7. And it gets +1 strength for each character in your dead pile. This card is just really good in draft. I mean, since, as I said, like at least 4 out of 5 decks are playing the Pale Mare, characters are dying pretty quickly, in addition to, you know, military claim and stuff like that. And, you know, I think in the end of some of my games, I had Silent Sisters that had like 8 strength. And it just becomes a monster in challenges. And it's just a great, efficient card for draft. And it's definitely worth picking one of these up. I mean, a lot of the times you'll get handed a pack that's got characters that aren't in your faction or that's got a bunch of various chuds. And I think if your choice is ever between Silent Sisters and basically any other chud, take the Silent Sisters, because they're just good.
Uh, Interesting. I mean, the fact that they're neutral and can be a solid body, I do really dig. Like, it's just a really solid kind of prize point that's gonna have solid strength over the course of the game, and really helps round out that character base. So I don't think it'd be on my top five list, but I think it's a very respectable card.
Well, it's not flashy. It's not a bomb. But I think it's the best. I think she's the best chud in the pool. So I'm kind of trying to, you know, I picked a bomb, and then I picked a card that's bad in draft that I only like in constructed, and then I picked the best chud, and then I'll, you know, I'm giving people a nice little smattering. I'm
spreading it out. Okay.
I'm not
I
just
like going to
pick the best five bombs in draft. I'm going to, you know, give people the lay of the land here.
Okay. I mean, I think what you're saying is pretty spot on. They also fill the intrigue icon, which I think in general the intrigue icon is probably like the hardest to consistently draft I've found so far. And the fact it's a solid, efficient dish body with an intrigue icon that can just grow as the game goes along. So it's definitely not a card you are sad to draw at any point in the game. So early on, it's just good because it has that intrigue icon, and then later in the game, as Patrick pointed out, when there's been at least one pale mare, it's a strong intrigue, and a strong power icon is very useful. And the fact it's non-unique, so if you draft multiples of it, you know, because there's no limit in draft to the number of copies you can play of a card, if you can get three or four of these, which is not impossible because I think it's a common, will just, you know, really help the efficiency of your deck and with a good icon spread.
It is indeed a common, and yes, I agree with that. Especially if you're playing that Knights and Armies deck, intrigue might be a weakness. And so picking up a couple of these just to have a big intrigue icon, really solid.
On to you, Will.
Okay, is it on to me? All right, so my next one I think will be less controversial. It's another draft-only card. This is Hollow Hill. It's almost the same as the first edition version. Let me find it here in the list. Why am I looking past it, evidently? There we go. It's a one gold location, neutral, of course, and has the reaction after you marshal a character with a faction affiliation that does not match any other card you control. Draw one card. And I think that this is not going to be hard to consistently activate, particularly with the new agendas in Valerian draft here. I think it's much easier to have a wide range of house spread if you want, and making sure that you can activate this at least once a turn I don't think is going to be too terrible to do if you want to build that way. And that kind of consistent extra draw is always good, but in particular in something like draft where you only have a limited number of copies of certain bombs, the faster you can get to them, the better. So draw, I think, even becomes more potent.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're playing the Knights and Armies agenda, or if you've kind of got screwed into having to play the agenda where you play all seven factions and everything costs more, this is a great card. I think if you're playing either of the other two agendas, you probably don't have enough factions for this to be justifiable, but in those first two, it's really solid. I had it in my Knights and Armies one. Drew me like two or three cards one game. Really solid card.
I mean, I definitely agree. I think it and the fact that it's a one drop and smooths out your setups is also very good. So, yeah, it's definitely a good efficient card that I like it because it's flexible, and it also is the kind of card that sort of, as Patrick is saying, if you do get screwed in your pool and end up having to play the seven faction agenda, that this actually helps make your deck more efficient because you're drawing. You're cycling your deck more regularly is really nice. It's a smart design that Nate and Danny did by slipping this in the pool the way it is. It's good escape valve for bad drafting.
All right. What'd you have down for your third one?
Well, Patrick was saying about how he only picks or wants to get a diversity, but I'm trying to just pick really efficient cards for draft, except for what my last one is. So mine is a card that we actually already mentioned earlier in our discussion of the Army's agenda, which is Ranging Party. Ranging Party is a ridiculous card in draft. It's super efficient. It has the two icons that are most important in draft. And it, in a Knights and Armies deck, it's sort of the engine in many ways that powers Knights and Armies decks. The Knights and Armies decks that I was running was, I think I managed to draft three of these, maybe four. And it just, and the same with the other, with Joe's deck, he also had several of them. It's just, it's a card that wins military and power challenges, which is what you need to do in draft. You need military challenges early and with big bodies to put the pressure on your opponent, and you need big bodies with power icons to close the game in the later part. So, and it's also at four cost, it also helps you for its efficiency. You know, that's good in a first snow meta, but it's also good in a Pell-Mell meta, because it lets you save more characters. You know, if it was five gold, that's still somewhat risky. But the fact that you can save, you know, this and maybe two to even three other characters is really, really powerful. So just the flexibility and efficiency of Ranging Party can't be understated in draft.
And it's a common, so.
Yep.
They're all over the place.
Yeah, it just it's one of the cards that makes that Knight's agenda so powerful and Army's agenda. Yeah.
And ironically, my two draft pools, the first one I played a Knight's Watch deck. The second one I played a Knights and Armies deck. I saw zero Ranging Parties both times. I was blown away. I knew that they were a common, and I was like, all right. As I started going to Knight's Watch, I'm like, okay, I'll find some Ranging Parties. Did not find any. I had one pack that had Benjen and three Ranging Parties, and I didn't have any Benjen. I was like, I have to take Benjen, and I didn't see a single other Ranging Party. I was so salty.
Yeah, particularly when you're drafting that Night's Watch deck. Oof, I'm sorry. Oof.
Yep, it was brutal. But I'll get back to that deck later.
Uh-oh. Good luck. But yeah, for what it's worth, I agree. It's just a very solid, efficient card, and I really like that. It's a very, very sweet spot on the cost curve, which is pretty important in draft when you can't always be certain about what you've got available to you.
Yep. So back over to me for card number four. My card number four. Where is it? Where was it? Oh no. I'm pretty sure it was Hollow Hill, so now I have to come up with another one. I am going to go with Corrin Halfhand, who I think is a really good bomb and is especially good in draft because, first of all, he's got Renown, which is great. Giving you power. He is expensive. He's 6 cost, but you know, he's not 7. It's fine. It's affordable. It's a little, you know, like I said when I was talking about the Raventree Hill Elite, 6 is a little on the high end. But I think for a character with native renown and an actual text box, it's worth it for this guy. His reaction after you win a military challenge in which he's participating, choose and kill a non-unique character with a lower strength than his controlled by the losing opponent. It's just so good against those Knights and Armies deck. Like, if you can get this guy out and win a military challenge, you can start killing Unsullied, you can kill all of their cheap knights, you can kill Knights of the Sun, all of those guys who may have multiple powers stacked on them because they're giving them renown. I think he's just a really strong bomb. And totally worth playing in draft. Were you chuckling at my hypocrisy in there, Roy? Was that?
I was chuckling at not you picking Corrin, who I think is a very solid bomb. I was more chuckling at you casting around for an extra option. That's what I was chuckling at. No, I think your argument is pretty spot on. That Corrin is a really powerful card. I think he's going to be also pretty powerful and constructed as well. You know, just the more renown on bodies is native renown is very powerful. I mean, one thing we missed with the Ravenclaw elite that just Quarren reminded me, though, that's sort of a weakness of him, is 6-cost characters are somewhat awkward with Pale Mare. It can definitely limit your options and put you in somewhat of an awkward situation. I mean, 7-costers, actually, and this is one of the arguments that Aaron was making about putting Pale Mare, into Constructed ASAP, is that it makes 7-costers even more awkward. So that's sort of, I think, the major drawback that he has. But otherwise, he is definitely a bomb and a really good reason to play Night's Watch as one of your two major factions, if you can do it.
So there we go. Yeah. Three Night's Watch cards so far on these lists. Makes it sound like Night's Watch might be pretty tempting.
Yeah, I really like Night's Watch in draft. I think they're my favorite faction for draft, personally.
They're very good in draft. The birds are really good in draft.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I mean, in general, their characters are just pretty economical, and that pays off in spades in draft, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Over to you.
Okay, well, I'm going to finally get out of draft-only cards. My last two are not. I'm actually going to go with one here that's going to be relatively similar to my first choice. This is going to be Seal of the Hand. This is another one that I think, while it's popular in Joust, I'm not sure it's going to be people's kind of first pick in Melee, but since you are really fishing for those bombs and not having quite the consistency of multiples that you can have in Joust, or Melee for that matter, in Constructed, I should say, being able to use one of these lords or ladies twice, let's be honest, looking at the card pool, almost certainly a lord, is gonna be pretty big, I think. You know, when you're throwing, I hate to use this Tywin as an example. I don't know, maybe the draft only Tyrion into a couple different challenges. That might be one of our better choices here. Let me take a look. Well, you know, maybe kind of scrolling through here, maybe the Lord pool in here is a little less than I was wanting it to be as far as really good targets for this. You know what? I'm looking back through it. I think I might have just talked myself out of this.
I was preparing to make that argument. Yeah, and you did it for me.
Yeah, how terrible is that? I mean, because I'm having to just look at the pool in Google Docs on Scantrell's list, which, by the way, shout out to Scantrell for putting this together. Pretty awesome. But still, of course, you know, when you look through the list just at first, you're like, oh, yeah, you know, Jaime, Tywin, Tyrion, you start seeing all this stuff, and then it really takes some digging back through here to go, oh, wait a minute, nope, that's a version that's just not very good on. Or, you know, these other characters, well, you know, the Stannis doesn't have renown, so getting him into two challenges isn't that great comparatively, so on and so forth. So, you know what? Evidently, I don't have a fourth card. I rescind my choice.
Alrighty.
Take that card, Will.
Nice try, though, Will.
It was a good effort.
You know, it would have been great. All it would take would be a bear handful. Yeah.
But I think even if the Lord count was a little higher, I still think it would be a rough card in draft because the original argument that people made against Seal of the Hand, that it's a huge tempo hit to do a 3-cost attachment, is actually much truer in draft. And even your lord, you know, it's not terminal, so it goes back, but even if there were a few more lords, like, characters just don't survive as long in draft as they do in constructed right now, and so, you know, you may quickly find yourself out of lord characters, even if you're able to draft three or four, or lady characters as well. You know, if you're able to draft those cards, you know, they're gonna die, and they're gonna be targets for the kind of removal, whether that's the Palmare, whether that's somebody who drafted Valor, or Tears, or Put, but they're going to go after that character because they know that they can really constrain your options and turn that into a dead card pretty quickly. So I think it's definitely one of it's a card I would definitely avoid drafting, unless my deck, you know, the stars were crossed and I got every lord under the sun that I could.
Yeah, if you have three Victarians, yeah, go ahead and grab that, but
Iron Mines.
Otherwise, yeah.
So, is that on to me then?
It sure is.
So, mine is a card that's been out for a while, which is, I think he was in the Wolves box, which is Recaro. He's really good for, I think, a couple of reasons. First, he has that intrigue icon that it's sort of lacking, and a military icon, that's good. And his ability is actually pretty easy to trigger in draft, because it, usually in most games, at least one opponent will be playing Feast or Famine, which is a draft-only plot that's both a summer or a winter plot, and has the possibility of giving a person to claim or a large amount of economy. And so, you know, maybe once or twice a game, you're going to be able to consistently use him in two challenges. So he's a pretty efficient body at 5/4 with that good intrigue icon. And if you do end up seeing other Blood Riders, like I can't think of who the other one is, the 6-cost one.
Which one? Which
the
one?
6-cost one. The one that there's Intimidate. Right?
That is Recaro.
Oh, did I drop?
Recaro gets Intimidate, Jogo gets Stealth, and Ago stands a Blood Rider.
I'm talking about Ago. I don't know why I'm saying Recaro. That's the key thing. See, I screwed up the names. That's what happens as soon as I saw it, so I screwed it all up. But Recaro is also good in draft. But my point was actually I was talking about Ago. I apologize. He's just very good. So all of the arguments that I just made, they can apply.
They make more sense about Ago.
Yes, sorry. They all with such interchangeable names. I apologize.
And he was, in fact, in the Wolves box. I was also very confused because Recaro was in like the second pack of the first cycle. So.
Yeah, I just confused the names when I was pulling them out. I was like, oh, Blood Rider. Yep. Yes, this is the
Blood Rider. That's the one.
That's the one.
Well, so. I was going to say that I built a deck around Recaro, and I did, but I did not build a deck around Ago, so I can't really comment on that one. So. Unfortunately, I would have loved an Ago in that Recaro deck, but I couldn't find one.
Well, it turns him on, so. Yeah.
I know. It would have been great. I found a Recaro, and I was like, oh, all right, maybe I can make a Blood Rider deck. And then I kept finding more Blood Riders, but they were all Recaro. So I just had 4 copies of Recaro and 2 of the non-unique Blood Riders, and it actually worked out pretty well.
I mean, you can dupe the hell out of that guy right there.
Yeah, exactly. I just had a huge Recaro and had the non-unique Blood Riders to make him work. So, yeah.
So, yes.
So that sends it over to me for my last card.
I think so.
All right, well, my last card is what I consider to be arguably the best card in draft. And it's one that I already said, and it is Mr. Benjen Stark. Old Corset Benjen.
Interesting.
A nondescript guy, you know, 5-cost, 4-strength. But I tell you what, not being able to die in draft and giving you power is really good. And in fact, my first draft deck had 4 Benjen Starks in it, and it was amazing. Because by about halfway through the game, I would have, you know, 20 or so cards in my deck, and 4 of them would be Benjen. So there was a great chance that I would draw Benjen and then just keep killing him over and over again to get power. In the final game of that pod, I won by triggering Benjen 4 times in 5 turns. And together with my Winter Festival for 10 power without having to win a single challenge.
Jeez.
So I am all aboard the Benjen hype train. He's just bonkers good in draft, and he's my favorite draft card, so. Save the best for last.
He's really good in draft. I mean, he's solid in constructed, and he's fantastic in draft. So I agree with everything you're saying there, Patrick. He's, you know, the only thing that's missing is he's not a knight, so you actually do have to run Knight's Watch as your main faction, or your secondary faction if you're running one of the two faction agendas. So,
it's true.
Yep, that's his only real drawback.
Very yep. good one.
Yeah, jeez. I'm just still marveling at Patrick's huge tale of success there. I mean, that's a lot of power. Hard to naysay that. That's yeah. a pretty small sample size.
I mean, you know, it's true. But I played three games in that pod and won all of them handedly on the back of my four Benjens. So, and also three okay. Messenger Ravens to dig for more Benjens. So.
I mean, you know. The Messenger Ravens actually, in many ways, may have made the deck even better than the Benjen did. A lot of
yeah.
draws.
But in the last game, I didn't see a single Messenger Raven. I just kept finding Benjens and kept killing him over and over again.
Nice.
He synergizes real well with Pale
well,
Mare.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, either one of you flips Pale Mare, and he's a character who's expensive that you don't have to keep at all for him to do his stuff. So, if Pale Mare were discard instead of kill, Benjen would be significantly worse in draft.
Well, I, you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned Pale Mare, because my last card I actually like a lot, partly because of the Pale Mare as well, but that card is March to the Wall. And I think if you can nab that, that's going to put a lot of power at your fingertips to make for some pretty debilitating blowouts. And with the Pale Mare trying to keep boards, you know, small and manageable, it just takes a little bit for you to be up and in a position where that March the Wall is much more beneficial to you. And, you know, a good play on that type of thing in draft is likely to be that much more backbreaking due to, you know, those consistency reasons that we've kind of mentioned before. So I dig it. Go figure.
Yeah, it's a solid card.
Yeah, very, very solid. I mean, I think it's a rare, so it's not a card that you could really plan your deck around, but it is definitely a card, I think, that you hate draft, even if your card pool, say you're playing a Knight's deck that may not, or Knight's Army's deck that may not run Pale Mare, it's definitely a card, if you see that in your pack, unless there's a card that 100% synergizes with your game plan and is necessary for your game plan, you want to pull that card out of the pool. It's very powerful.
Well, and because it's a rare and that much less likely to be seen, how many more times are you going to have your opponent in a position maybe that they've done to themselves where March the Wall is going to be a blowout, but they made the calculated choice to get there because odds are good my opponent doesn't have it.
Yeah.
So if you see it available to you,
they might be absolutely. They might be more willing to set up something that leaves them in a marchable position and things of that nature. So yeah, I think if you're playing a deck that it fits in, absolutely grab it. No question. Unlike Naval Superiority, which I think is an atrocious rare, as far as plots go.
Yes.
I wouldn't say atrocious. It's. I think it's a...
I think the existence of Feast or Famine just makes it, like, not good. Because you have... I mean, I think there's a pretty solid chance that if they want an economy plot, it's going to be Feast or Famine. And you're going to have to basically... guess if they're flipping Feast for crows or feast or famine, because if they flip feast or famine, you're completely screwed. So there's like a 50-50 chance, even if you guessed right that they're needing an economy plot, that you're going to whiff on it. And also Pale Mare is not hit by it, nor is Filthy Accusation. So like 3 out of the 5 default plots are not hit by it. And especially if there's like multiple of them in the pool, so it's people see that they're floating around and they're going to try to play around it. Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, I think it's a high risk, high reward draft. Like, I think. Oh, well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's something I would necessarily draft, but I could definitely see myself getting fucked over by that plot if it flips at the wrong time.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. Yeah. It's not as bad as the King's Peace, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I think that might be the worst rare in the format.
It's also I think it's got to be the worst faction plot, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's one of the worst cards in the game.
Yeah.
I think it is easily in the top 5 worst cards in the entire game.
And it's so close to being good. That's the problem. If it had like one more gold or something like that.
Or anything, yeah.
It didn't have the bad traits for Constructed. But anyway, we're getting away from it. So.
Yeah.
So, are we on to me for the last one?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so mine is a plot, and it is vulnerable to naval superiority. And that is, this one I picked entirely for fun, it is Common Cause, which is a draft-only plot. It is 3 gold, 1 initiative... X claim, and we'll see what X is in a second, 5 reserve. X is the number of different faction affiliations among characters you control. This is a amazingly fun plot. I mean, you know, this is the 42 claim plot, right? You know, that you hear people complain about, right? That you can get up to 7 claim, right?
8 claim.
8 claim, that's right, because we have 8 factions now. 8 claim... More reliably, like, it's not difficult to build an actually good deck that you can get 3 claim reliably. Its gold is pretty acceptable. It's just, it's a fun plot. When your opponent flips this, you're definitely in a, like, oh, fuck mode. And when you see this in your pool, you smile. Like, even if you're not going to pick it, which you should pick it just to get it out of the pool, but you see this, you're going to smile. You're going to be like, oh, okay, this is the kind of wonky stuff you can do in draft. This is a fun card. So Common Cause is a fun card. It could be a very powerful card if you build your pool properly around it. It is just, yeah, it's what draft's kind of about. Silly, broken things that we would never want in our constructed matches.
Absolutely. And I mean, and then you got those hilarious times when Johnny Wright gets off 2-8 claim challenges in a turn. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm all for silly broken things.
Was this against
Chris? It was pretty glorious. I don't think it was not against Chris, but Chris was there, witnessing it. It was pretty incredible. The deck was built to give that 8 claim challenge. It was a Knights and Armies deck, had a bunch of different Knights and Armies for different factions, and then had House of the Undying to go take your opponent's dead characters to have even more. And he finally got off the 8 claim challenge. So,
oh, jeez. And the art is really good.
That sounds impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just don't know what else to say after that. I'm blown away.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. I think that's
Yeah.
That's all our favorite cards.
I think that's a quick and dirty look, so to speak, at the draft format. I'll be eager to have the opportunity to actually play the second-ed format myself, see if any of my card choices pan out, and I'm sure we will definitely be talking about draft more on the show another time.
For sure. I feel like we can have a another draft episode at some point.
Oh, I think we most certainly could.
I think we could probably go over, I think, some of the basics a little bit more explicitly, like the term hate drafting and stuff.
Oh yeah, I think that yes. We should definitely have a whole kind of episode, instructional draft episode of sorts.
Yes, how to heat draft, as you said, you know, how to make a guess at cards that are going to table as the term goes, and what that term is, you know, so on and so forth. I think it would be very good.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, shall we move on to props and slops?
Yeah, let's move back to props and slops. I feel like we got away from it for a while, and now let's come back to it.
Only a little while.
Although I mean, the audience might not know what I'm talking about because Will probably cut it all and put it at the end. So.
Yeah, it's going to be even later. It's going to be some really trippy time travel.
Well, you know, time travel's confusing.
Yeah. It is. Man, you wind up causing alternate timelines and everything. Pretty sure we're living in Flashpoint.
Flops
right now.
To time travel. Alternate. And also props to time travel. Let's just both.
What if we're in a time loop? Are we in an alternate world line? We'll never know. We'll never know.
No, we're in a fixed point in time. We just keep living this podcast over.
Oh my god!
That's what our audience feels like. Over. Will, not.
Oh god, yeah.
It's every freaking Friday they have to open the Steins Gate to get us out of here.
I don't know how they do it.
I don't know. They might go mad. Anyway, so I want to prop my sweet new apartment that I have here in Philadelphia, which is finally set up, and it is really awesome. And I also want to prop my girlfriend, who spent a bunch of last week helping me set things up and get all the bookshelves and the desk and all that stuff assembled so that it is a livable space that's not just full of boxes and books. So it's still full of books, but the books are where they're supposed to be. So, yeah, I definitely want to prop that.
Good. I'm glad it's working out for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss you when I come visit New York, though.
Yeah, well, I still come up to New York relatively regularly, so and I'll be at all the tournaments and stuff, so we'll just have to figure something out.
Good. Props to the new Lannister event, Insidious Schemes.
Oh,
I had really? Just props to, maybe not even the card, just to the interaction I had. I was playing a game with a friend of mine after our Battle of the Trident tournament, and I was playing a Lanny Stag deck, and I just, like, wildfired, and then I, like, dumped down my hand. I was, like, really struggling to win Dom. I couldn't find an Iron Throne, and I only had one card left in my hand, and he intrigued me. And he took the card for claim, and he's like, well, I guess I'll just play this Insidious Schemes. And then he's like, wait, do you not have any cards left? And I did not. And so he drew four cards, and then he played a second Insidious Schemes and drew another four cards, and had just drawn eight cards in one challenge. So it was pretty funny. It's not a great card, but it was a very funny interaction. I feel like...
Oh, do I have to proper...
I feel like
next?
We definitely have to discuss the fact that when we mute ourselves to avoid background noise, it makes it seem like we're all really not funny because nobody's laughing in the background because we're all muted.
No.
Yeah.
No, that just actually wasn't...
Well,
funny.
You know...
I wasn't muted.
That... I'm just going to go cry now. I'm going to leave.
No.
Bye, guys.
No, I definitely know what you're talking about. In fact, I remember one episode I was recording where Greg and I were physically together recording off of the same computer, and I kept unmuting it to laugh at something and then remuting, and Greg was giving me crap for that, and I had to explain to him, like, no, like, it sounds really, really creepy and terrifying if no one ever does that.
It does. It does. It makes it sound like we're all just really unfunny people, and I mean, some of us are. I certainly am not funny, but, you know, you guys gotta at least pretend so the audience might have a false illusion of my sense of humor, at least.
I mean, you try hard, man.
I do.
And that's like 80%
of it. Yeah, it sure is. You know, it's tough work out there, guys. It's a tough crowd.
Comedy's overrated.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least think of it this way. The listeners can't actually throw tomatoes and stuff.
Yeah, well, not yet. Someday. There'll be an app for that.
Marvels of virtual reality.
There's Smell-O-Vision virtual reality headset.
Yeah. Props to the art tournament that's going on in the Facebook group right now. That's pretty entertaining. There was an incredibly close one yesterday between the Knight of the Laughing Tree Come Over Westeros and the Thrones War Targaryen house card. It was so close. You had people from the Minnesota and the SoCal meta bribing people in the comments section, pandering for the last few votes.
Well,
that,
like so much recently, that whole vote showed why democracy doesn't work, because the SoCal house card should have just straight up won without very much debate or anything like that. It was clearly the most qualified card. It was best looking, well designed, comes from a good, you know, good meta. No offense to the Minnesotans, but, you know, for just, you know, once again, the Midwest just causes just problems, and I want to slop the failure of democracy that is how close that vote was.
Yep, slops to democracy. You heard it here first, guys. From the mouth of a historian. Slops to democracy.
You know, further slops on a related note. Slops to me for not entering any of the white book promo art things in there. I was definitely messaged about it, and then I definitely got busy with other things and completely forgot. I'm a little bummed. I really wanted to put our stand token in there, because I think that art of Danny is pretty sick, but I failed. I failed you all.
It's all right, Will. We forgive you.
You can never fail me in my kind heart, of. Will. Never.
Aw. Why, thank you, Roy.
Oh, man. What else should we prop? Slops to pack 4 not being in my hands yet. All of my decks need pack 4 cards. I'm in such a rut. I was like, I got home from Worlds all excited, and I was like, I'm gonna build a bunch of decks, and then I build them all with pack 4 cards, and now I'm like, alright, pack 4 any day now. Just come on over here so I can start playing again. Nope, still no? Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, it's killer that we know it's going to be such a, like, meta-changing and defining pack. It just feels hard to want to work on other stuff when, you know, it all depends on that.
And not even Valor, although also Valor, but Shadow Tower Mason and Haunted Forest are so good for Night's Watch. You've got my new Cersei Madness deck really likes Without His Beard. That's a huge boon.
Cersei Madness.
Patrick, you can't say nice things about Without His Beard on this podcast. Come on. That's like
Without His Beard is now a very reasonable card.
All right. That's
it
a
is
meme
nothing...
that goes back to when you were in like middle school. Like it's classic. It's like classic.
It is
2C1C/white.
I know, but it's actually good now. It's like, in that deck especially, really solid card.
You know what I'm willing to say? It almost made it on my list of cards for draft.
Yeah.
The old version was already bearable in draft. This new one is better than
absolutely.
That. I almost said it just to bring that up, but it's it is potentially a playable card now.
It's definitely playable, especially if you're playing new Cersei. You should be playing without his beard.
There you go.
It certainly.
Or if you're playing a hand emptying deck,
which you're probably playing if you're playing the new Cersei. So
mm-hmm.
It's also be good when Darkwing Stark Words comes out, like all zero cost events will.
Absolutely.
But
I mean that's plus that's a strict card advantage over your opponent to you if you're a Darkwing Stark Words. You're drawing a card and they're discarding a card.
What it used to. You can almost get there with Tainted Meriwether. I mean, sure, you have to discard something.
Yeah,
but still,
kind of.
You could just you're draining your hand at that point. You're just cycling cards for cycling cards at that point.
Well, hey, then you're just thinning your deck, and you're going to lose to the tiebreaker at that
point.
That's
true.
So.
You will be Kitsy-filled in a decider match at Gen Con and lose by one card that his opponent had
in your
62
deck.
Card deck. Is the reason why Kid lost that card.
Classic.
Well, that banter card counts.
Double banter.
Or
double
sometimes
banter
cards. Yeah. Double bantered.
Man, that's like Danger Zone level problems with this game. Yes! End of episode.
Jesus Christ. That's it, right? We're done. We're gone. It's over.
End of episode.
To a listener vote.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll vote in favor of that.
I don't think they'll vote,
to be honest.
No.
Hatch,
yeah.
Only the
Patreon. Yeah, that's very true. I don't think they'll vote. Ah, well, maybe. It might be close.
They might go for it.
We'll see. We should actually do that. Yeah.
That was my segue to tell the Patreon folks that they're awesome. So I just wanted to make sure I threw that out there again.
Yeah.
Especially with now Zencastr pushing out its first like full release, its 1.0, and going up to charging monthly for it, that kind of adds to our expenses. So having the Patreon folks, I think, is really gonna help offset things going forward. Speaking of announcement that I forgot to tell you guys when we were pre-planning the episode here. Though I had mentioned it in email a while back, I'm going to be putting up a spreadsheet so that listeners and particularly the Patreon folks can get a sense of what we're getting in and what it's going to. I'd like that to be kind of more transparent to folks. So I'll be putting that up over the weekend.
It's going to you and Kristen's lavish lifestyle, Will, right? That's where we're all going to find out.
Yeah.
With the spreadsheet.
Yes. It's mostly just Will's exorbitant salary.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with everybody.
I finally found a way to get all that wicked podcast money.
Yep.
Living
been
the dream.
Hunting it for so long.
This episode brought to you by Will's Rampant Greed.
Yep.
That is the best transition ever.
I'm Roy.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I'm Greed. Hello.
Yep. I guess if we're going with Deadly Sins, I'll be Lust. That
Ooh,
sounds like fun.
Really?
It's
fun. I always kind of pictured you as Avernus.
Well, you know.
I guess I'm
That's fair, too. I don't think I didn't remember that one. It's been a long time since I read the Bible. So I forgot about that one.
They're not actually in
the
Bible.
Okay, we're not going to get into that particular issue of where these originated, but. Then that begs the question of what's Roy? My vote's for Sloth.
I am pretty lazy, but I would. I have a very specific one though. I'd say pride. Pride is my big problem. So
okay, man. Now I just want to like assign a deadly sin to all of our hosts because I mean we all know what Aaron is, right?
Wrath.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that seems accurate. Yeah, but I mean, you could go pride there as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, I could definitely see an argument for that.
Yeah.
Man, what does that make Tommy? Is he gluttony?
I guess he's got to be. Yeah.
Maybe
envy. Yep. He could be envy. He envies.
He could be.
I guess
we talk about Aaron on the show.
That's fair enough. Yeah.
There we go. Yep.
And I guess we can throw Kyle into gluttony then.
Actually, no. If we let Roy have pride, I think Kyle should probably have sloth, and then that would explain why he's only to make it on the show once every 6 months.
That makes sense. I like it.
Although
I like where you're going with
the
this.
The reason for him not being on the show is the opposite of sloth, right? If you're terrible work schedule.
It's because he's working.
Nah, you know.
Well, yeah, I didn't expect us to go down this train of thought. I kind of like it. Listeners,
like
however,
it too, yeah.
They're going to hate it.
No, they're going to love it.
I'm gonna ask the Glazer question. It'll be interesting to see how much of this is in the final episode. That's actually what I'll be listening for when we'll release the episode on Friday, is how much of this made it in.
Yeah.
Hold on. I got to know now. Where are the seven deadly sins from? Where did they originate? This brief historical.
They're from Catholic dogma. They're distillation of Christian teachings on these subjects. So it comes from Catholic medieval dogma.
Yeah, all right, that makes sense.
So that's the main thing is it originated during the medieval period rather than actually being lined out in the Bible.
It makes a lot of sense. I'm not a religious historian.
No, but I mean a lot of stuff just is like distillation of. What's in the Bible? Like you can draw devil sillies.
Sure,
the Bible,
sure,
but,
of course. But, I mean, yeah, you can do that with almost all dogmas.
Oh wow! Hey, get this though. So, random aside, as I'm looking here at Wikipedia, is that there were actually two more sins on the official list originally?
That
were eventually eliminated. One was folded into pride because Pope Gregory decided it was too similar. That was vainglory.
I can see that. I can definitely see that.
Yeah. So, roughly boasting, which I guess, you know, if we add that in, maybe that's Aaron?
That's definitely Aaron. That is Aaron. Hardcore.
And I apologize if I mispronounce this, because it doesn't specify acedia? Acedia?
Yeah.
Acedia?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure how that C is actually pronounced. It's A-C-E-D-I-A.
I don't know. I got a D in Latin, so I can't really help you.
Ouch.
If it's Latin, it's always a hard C, so it'd be Acedia.
Or Acedia? Perhaps? Would that be a long E or like a schwa? Acadia?
I think it would be Acadia.
Okay.
If my Latin remembrance is correct.
So it's basically like apathy. Neglecting to do things that you are supposed to do.
It's very deadly.
All right. Sure. Yeah, it is.
So. Eventually, that
I feel like we should bring that one back in the modern era. I mean, that's
the eighth deadly sin.
Yeah, like procrastination. That hits everybody real hard in the modern era.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I blame Apple.
You know what? You're not wrong.
You know that is amusing on multiple levels. Thank you, Roy. both for the tech company. And for the, you know, biblical Garden of Eden apple. Yep. I like how you're bringing that all together right there.
Roy's a crafty guy. He's got a lot of wit.
Yeah, multi-layered to these quips.
Yeah.
My sense of humor is highly sophisticated.
You got to be pretty sharp to keep up with Roy Rogers.
Yep.
Pretty sharp.
You know what the problem is here, guys, though, at this point?
We have not mentioned the Game of Thrones card game one time.
Oh, thank goodness.
12 minutes in?
Someone finally did it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
We got to do
probably get to it eventually.
And in particular, in answer to the Aaron question that was asked earlier, you know, at one point I thought, oh, this was just amusing enough that I may leave it. But now we've wandered and kept going for long enough that I do feel obligated to trim. So,
nah.
It should go into the special features. Just put it at the end.
Keep it in. Yeah. Keep it in.
It'll be a real solid Easter egg.
Put it in the danger zone.
Just a really long Easter egg, like a full 12 minute Easter egg.
One time, one episode, you kept a bunch of stuff that you, Aaron, and I were talking about. I don't even remember what it was.
Oh, yeah. And it was long. It was maybe 10 or 15 minute chunk, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I forget what the hell we were talking about, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so are we transitioning?